Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
See a check engine light come out? Come on, I'm not a car guy. That's why you have Car Shield. Protection warranty when yours runs out, carshield.com. So Jeff Perlman writes New York Times bestsellers for a living. I think I was first introduced to him years ago in America was Boys Will Be Boys. It was the controversial book because it told the truth about the Cowboys. There was a book about Walter Payton, Barry Bonds, the anti-hero, gunslinger, Brett Favre. Exhaustive research. I mean, just like it's scuba diving. It is get the gear on and go a million miles deep. Well, the new book is Three Ring Circus. And what's great about dynasties in sports is they never get old. They just don't. You can read about dysfunction on dynasties. I just read a Patriots book, and it's like it's just incredible. I just can't get enough on dynasties. And obviously the Shaq, Kobe, Jerry West, Phil Jackson, a lot of egos, a lot of greatness, and Jeff Perlman, Three Ring Circus. The book is now out, and he is joining us live. So, you know, it's funny, Jeff. Usually, dysfunction punctures momentum. And Kobe and Shaq, I mean, different backgrounds, a lot of dysfunction, but they made it work for quite a while. How did they make it work?
I mean, the number one thing is they had two of the most of the five most talented guys on the court at all times. And that's a huge thing. That's a huge thing. I just think they chose to coexist, not lovingly, but they chose to coexist. And I really think what the Lakers did, the most important thing they did, is they always had these role players who doubled as almost like guidance counselors. So whether it was Derek Harper, Rick Fox, J.R. Reed, John Sally, you know, on and on, Ron Harper, there are always guys who are there to kind of smooth things over in the locker room. Brian Shaw, guys like that. And it just made a world of difference. So even though it's funny because Shaq and Kobe occupied their own orbits in that locker room, and the media would go to Shaq and he would say something about Kobe and then they would go to Kobe, and it was the most passive aggressive nonsense ever. Truly ludicrous. But these guys, these veterans, were all able to handle it well and sort of work it out. So it was okay. It wasn't that big a deal. And also Phil Jackson, to his credit, like when Kurt Rambis was the interim coach, Shaq's big complaint was he needs to stop babying Kobe. He needs to stop babying Kobe. And Phil Jackson didn't baby Kobe. He kind of let it be. He let these guys run the locker room, and it kind of worked.
So I remember when Shaq was in college. In fact, I talked to Jerry Tarkanian. I was in Vegas, and he told me about Shaq. He said, there's a kid down in Louisiana. He's going to change the game. But Kobe was different. He grew up in Italy. He was a high school player. We didn't know much about him. I mean, literally, it wasn't a time when you drafted a guard out of high school, okay? So,
yeah.
Jerry, you don't think about it as a risk, but Jerry West drafts a high schooler, makes a trade with Charlotte. Was there any misgivings? Was he nervous? Was there any doubt for Jerry West with Kobe when he's 18?
All right, so it's the best thing ever. So, it's all John Calipari's fault. It's all John Calipari's fault. So John Calipari is a coach in the Nets. He's a young coach, first year. And they have decided they are going to draft Kobe Bryant with the 8th pick in the 96 draft. It is a lock. That is who we are drafting. And John Nash is the general manager. They're all on board. They've brought Kobe in 4 times. They love him. Leading up to the draft, they actually meet with Kobe's parents. And they're like, we're going to draft your son. And Joe and Pam Bryant are like, that's great. He'll be nearby. Day before the draft, Kobe Bryant calls John Calipari on his own and says, I want to get away from my family. I don't want to play in New Jersey. I don't want you to draft me. Kobe's agent calls John Calipari and says, yeah, if you guys draft Kobe, he probably won't play this year, or he might go to Italy. Calipari's freaking out. He's like, oh my God. He goes to John Nash, the GM. He's like, I don't know what I'm going to do. What are we going to do? John Nash, you need to calm down. It's all just a bluff. It's just a bluff. Kerry Kittles out of Villanova is represented by David Falk. David Falk calls John Calipari and says, Kerry really wants to play with you guys. If you don't draft him, if he's there, I'm never going to have a player go to you again. Calipari is freaking out. He goes into John Nash. John, I don't know what we're going to do. John Nash is like, Cal, you need to calm down. It's all just a bluff. And behind the scenes, there's this whole mechanism to get Kobe to LA because he already signed a deal with Adidas. They don't want him playing in the swamps in New Jersey. They want him in LA. Jerry West is friends with Kobe's agent, Arne Tellem. And John Nash is telling Cal, we got to do this. We got to do this. We have to draft him. He's going to change the franchise. It's a day morning of the draft. John Calipari, who has in his contract his final personnel say, gathers everyone around and he says, I've made a decision. If Kerry Kittles is there at number 8, we're going to take Kerry Kittles. And if he's not there, we're going to take Kobe Bryant. And John Nash just does one of those and puts his hands in his head. Of course, Kerry Kittles is there at number 8. I talked to Kittles. Kittles was like, I played with Kobe in the summer. I would have drafted Kobe too. They end up drafting Kerry Kittles. Jerry West is doing a freaking dance in his office because he knows the next 4 picks are not going to be Kobe Bryant. He has his deal worked out with Charlotte. And he ends up trading Vlade for the rights of Kobe. And he says to Jerry Buss, right after that happens, I just got you the best player in this draft. Because they had worked out Kobe twice, once against Michael Cooper, once against Dante Jones. And it was the best 2 workouts Jerry West had ever seen.
Wow. How about that? You know, when you do these books, I mean, again, it's scuba gear. You deep dive. There's always a crazy story. You have to find, I mean, you have hundreds of sources per book. Was there a crazy, who did you track down that was crazy? What was the craziest story in the book?
I mean, my favorite track down, I love the track downs. And J.R. Ryder, you know, he was a Laker for 1 year. People forget, J.R. Yeah. Ryder was a Laker for 1 year, former slam dunk champ. So J.R. Ryder, who I love, I actually really love, he twice in his career, when writers wrote something that he did not like, actually said to them, I know where your family lives. Oh, like that was his threat to them. I know where your family lives. All I had was an address for J.R. Ryder. I did not have a phone number. And I was going to be in Arizona. So I decided I'm going to drive to J.R. Ryder's house. And I drive out there. I get there at like 9:30, which is a little early, but that's okay. I knock on the door. A kid answers. I have my USFL book with me. I'm like, hey, is J.R. Ryder here? He's like, hold on. A woman comes to the door. I'm like, hey, my name's Jeff Perlman. I'm a writer. Is J.R. Ryder here? She goes, hold on. They close the door. I hear her and a guy, adult male, yelling at each other. And then the door opens and there's J.R. Ryder. And he goes, who are you? And I'm like, hey, my name's Jeff Perlman and I'm a writer and I'm doing a book about the... Bro, are you effing kidding me? Bro, you just knock on my door. Are you kidding me? He opens the door and comes out and he's like this far away from me. And he's like, bro, that is not cool. And I'm convinced at this moment I'm about to get punched by J.R. Ryder. And he goes, what's that book you have? And I'm like, oh, it's a book I did about the USFL. And is that Trump? I'm like, yeah, Trump owned a team. What are you working on? I'm like, well, I'm doing a book about the Lakers during the Shaq Kobe years. All right, man. I'll talk to you. Ends up giving me 2 hours.
Wow.
J.R. Ryder. And he was awesome. And I just want to say the best story ever is J.R. Ryder's playing for the Lakers and they're on the road and he oversleeps and he asked the front desk clerk to write him a note to give to Phil Jackson explaining that he did not get a wake-up call. So literally J.R. Ryder arrives at practice and gives Phil Jackson a note like a student late for class that says, dear Coach Jackson, we are sorry on behalf of whatever hotel was the Hyatt. We regret that we were unable to provide J.R. Ryder with the requisite wake-up call. It is our fault. And he gives it to Phil Jackson as his excuse for not being practice on time.
These are the kind of stories you get. It's a great book. It's called Three Ring Circus with Jeff Perlman. You know, it's when you read the book, Shaq and Magic Johnson has this quality too. Magic likes you to ask for help. Like if Magic's offended if you move to LA and don't ask him for help. And yep. I think Shaq wanted to be a little bit of a father figure for Kobe, right? Like not only the physical stature he was so big, but you know, he went to college and but it didn't work that way. And why, tell the audience why, because I think Shaq wanted that and would have been comfortable with that, but it didn't work that way.
I talked to a guy named Mike Penberthy. Do you remember Mike Penberthy?
Yes, I know. Yes, I do.
He was he played with the Lakers for a spell for a year and he went to Masters College. And he told me when he first got to the Lakers, he had a He made the team and he didn't have a suit. He only had a jacket he bought at Nordstrom's off the rack. And Shaq sees him wearing this jacket and he says, Mike, do you own any suits? And Pemberthy's like, I don't. Shaq's like, tomorrow, meet me here. And he brings his personal suit maker, his outfitter, and he pays for 6 of Mike Pemberthy's suits.
Wow. Yeah.
When Shaq was teammates with Mark Madsen, he would go around and ask women if they were Mormon and if they were single so he could introduce them to Mark Madsen, who was Mormon and single. Like, he would fly people in, the parents of teammates in, to see their kids' first game in the NBA. He would pay for the funerals of teammates' parents. He was, Pemberthy said to me, he's the best teammate who's ever existed, just the best teammate who ever existed. And that's what he wanted to be, to his credit. He just wanted to be that. And Kobe comes along, and Kobe's first introduction to the Lakers is first training camp in Hawaii. Dale Harris is a coach. All the players gather around, and they introduce each other. So it's like, hey, I'm Nick Van Exel. I'm Eddie Jones. I'm Kobe Bryant. I played at Lower Merion last year, and nobody here is going to punk me. Like, that was his introduction to Lakers. Nobody here is going to punk me. He's 18 years old. And Kobe just wants him to say, can we go out to dinner? Can you help me with this? I don't understand this. And it just wasn't who he was. And Kobe had, Shaq kind of had this thing in his head. I'm Batman. Kobe's going to be Robin. I'm Big Brother. He's going to be Little Brother. But it just wasn't who Kobe Bryant was. And you're right. You are 100% right. The Magic Shaq comparison is a really good one. He just wanted you to ask, and he just wanted to be loved. And Kobe was not someone who did that.
By the way, Jeff adds a prologue to the book. The book had been written when Kobe passed, so he adds some texture and context to that as well. It's in the book. The book is called Three Ring Circus. What I love about this stuff, there's a shot of the book. You know, it's interesting now that LeBron's in town. The Lakers are a fascinating legacy. You've had, there was kind of the flaky Wilt into the sort of academic prickly Kareem, into everybody loves Magic, into bigger than life Shaq. And then there was there's Magic. And then there's kind of the aloof prodigy Kobe. And now it's LeBron. And I know, you know, you're not writing a book with LeBron in mind, but I love your take on this, is that what's fascinating about the Lakers dynasty is all these superstars have been unique. They're all just, I mean, there is a Magic Shaq thing that's kind of similar, but yes. You're kind of feeling on how the Laker, if the Lakers won the title, Jeff, how Kobe and Magic were so deeply embedded into the lore of the franchise. You know, here comes LeBron moving into town. He's already won titles. If he wins, what does it mean for the Lakers? How much of a Laker is LeBron in your opinion?
It's so funny. I have a 20-year-old nephew named Jordan, and he's always like, LeBron is the greatest Laker ever, right? And he's like, no, what are you talking about? You know, no. I feel like in history, we're always going to think of LeBron first and foremost for Cleveland.
Yes.
I just think it's a guarantee, and that's what it is. And I feel like that's the big difference here, is that when you think of Kobe, he's a Laker. When you think of Magic, he's a Laker. Even Shaq with the 4 years in Orlando, he's a Laker. Will Chamberlain, who played in Philly, a Laker. Jerry West, a Laker. And I do think the big difference here is his legacy will be great. He'll have brought the Lakers a title. It's wonderful. I just don't think he goes down the same way, because I don't think he will be thought of as a Laker, a career Laker. And I think here in LA, that really means something. Not just that you played here, but that you, like Kobe, when he died, I'm a native New Yorker. I've lived here for 6 years. The thing that just did it for me and shocked me is how much people felt that death. And they felt like he was... It wasn't just a star dying. It was an icon dying. It was a part of LA dying.
Yes.
And I'm not sure if LeBron has that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, I don't. Yeah, no, I think you're totally right. When Kobe passed away, as somebody that lives in Los Angeles, I was in an airport. I just landed. I literally was sick to my stomach. I went to the back of a restaurant. It was very emotional. Like, I felt like Los Angeles lost something. He was so Los Angeles. It's very much, it feels Troy Aikman, Dallas. Like, Aikman, he sounds like he's from Dallas. He looks like he's from Dallas. He is Dallas. And I'm with you. I think LeBron is remarkable, but the depth of that relationship with fans, speaking of depth, the book is called Three Ring Circus. There's dozens of stories. Jeff writes a book every couple years. We bring him on, strongly recommend it. And boy, I'll tell you, it's a dynasty with egos and stories. and conflict, and you get all of it there. Jeff, it's great talking to you again. I haven't seen you in a while. Keep safe for you and your fam, your kids and your wife, and continued success.
Thank you so much. It's really a pleasure being here. I appreciate it.
The book is out. Three Ring Circus. There's just, you know, it's funny. I covered J.R. Ryder in college at UNLV.
That's a great story.
I covered him in college at UNLV. He was difficult. I'll just say that. He was difficult.
Well, he sounds like he's still on brand.
That's exactly. J.R. Is it J.R. Ryder or he's changed it to Isaiah? At some point he flipped. And I'm not sure where we're at on that. Yeah, J.R., Isaiah, whatever it is. By the way, Raycon's new wireless earbuds, the Everyday E25 buyraycon.com/herd. buyraycon.com/herd. We're late, but Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line News.
All right, I'm going to spring this on you guys, but I'm going to cut to the second story. We didn't discuss this, but we are late. So Michael Jordan is getting into NASCAR. He is pairing up with Denny Hamlin to start a new single car NASCAR team, and Bubba Wallace will be their driver. Jordan is excited to team up with the only black driver at the top level of NASCAR, writing in a statement, "I see this as a chance to educate a new audience and open up more opportunities for black people in racing." Bubba Wallace tweeted, "This is a unique, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity that I believe is a great fit for me at this point in my career. I'm grateful and humbled that they believe in me, and I'm super pumped to begin this adventure with him." He announced he was leaving Richard Petty Motorsports after this season on September 10th, so clearly this has been in the works for a while.
Well, Michael owns the Charlotte Hornets. Am I wrong on this? Isn't Charlotte the home of NASCAR? Goulet, it's like 50 drivers live there. It feels like Charlotte.
All of the NASCAR teams are based out of the Charlotte area.
Okay. So this would be a perfect fit. Charlotte, Michael, Bubba Wallace.
Hamlin talked about, he put out a statement, you know, announcing this and said that him and Michael had become friends and started discussing starting a team. So I think this is great. It's just expanding the sport. Sports obviously gone through a lot of changes this year, and Bubba Wallace was at the center of a lot of that.
Yeah.
So Michael Jordan spreading his wings even further in the sports world. Yeah, I'm here for it. So the Colts are one of the few teams with fans in the stands for their games. And on Sunday, Darius Leonard gave his gloves to a young fan after the game. But he didn't realize his wedding ring was stuck inside. So on Monday, Bleacher Report's Tyler Brook tweeted, "My stepnephew got Darius Leonard's game gloves yesterday. Plot twist, Leonard's ring was accidentally in the gloves. Someone help us get his wedding ring back to him." And Leonard replied with, "I need that," with a bunch of laughing emojis. So it was a really cute picture. He gave his gloves to a young fan. Apparently they've connected on Twitter and the ring is on its way back to Leonard. But
That is funny, actually.
That's a funny little story. And yeah. It's nice. It's been, I know a lot of places that are allowing fans to be in. It's been nice to have the fans there.
Yeah.
I'm obviously on the side that we need to be as cautious and prepared as possible.
Kansas City had some first week. Indy's got some.
Yes. Yeah. And some college teams are letting fans in as well. Dolphins had, fans.
Who had 20,000, Goulet?
The Cowboys had 20,000.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I would have no problem with somebody letting in every third, fourth seat a fan. That if you wear a mask, I'm good with it.
It looks like they're doing a good job of managing it. Listen, a lot of these places are eventually going to get cold. It's not the worst idea to have a mask on to begin with. So as long as our people are being safe and wearing masks and staying away from each other, I'm cool with it.
Good stuff, Joy, with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Okay, call in, call out. I didn't make the name up. There's a bunch of 2-0 teams, but teams get hot early and then fold. 0-2 generally gives you some certainty. 2-0 doesn't mean anything. That's coming up. Call in, call out. We've all heard of Casper, outrageously comfortable, but not outrageously priced. The sleep company that wants to own the bedroom. They've got it all. Mattresses, award-winning pillows, sheets, duvets, even a dog bed, transforming the way we sleep. Every Casper mattress designed with a system to adapt to your body. Inside, precisely 1,500 perforations create a cooling system. 86 supportive gel pods align with your spine to eliminate aches and pains. Bed frames, bedding. Now with 0% APR financing options, even easier to try a Casper mattress. Put some money down, you get the mattress, no finance charge. Got to use the code. Casper.com, code HERD, H-E-R-D. If you use the code, you get $100 off your mattress order. That's code HERD, H-E-R-D, for $100 off your mattress order. Terms and conditions apply.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
When it comes to reaching health goals, about changing a mindset and habits, it's about Noom. Go to Noom.com/Herd, N-O-O-M. Okay, there are 11 2-0 teams. That's tied for the most in NFL history. Now, some... Chiefs, Ravens, obviously we buy. There's a bunch of other ones. Game is called Call In. Am I in or call out? Joy, let's go.
All right, Bills.
Buffalo, I'm call in. I'm in. First of all, they played a Miami defense that's very well coached and a Jets defense that last year at the end of the year played very well, and yet they ranked top five in total yards. The Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs pairing is not only working, it's working fast. So Diggs has 240 yards receiving. That's the most receiving yards in the NFL. And again, I think this is a really elite coaching staff. The GM and the coaching staff, head coaching staff, is very aligned. I'm in on this. This is a playoff team.
Steelers, call in or call out?
Call out. First of all, Jeff Driscoll got down to a fourth down at the 15-yard line. Jeff Driscoll, or they beat them. The Steelers' offense is poor on third down. Now, they were missing some offensive linemen this week, but they're still, in the last 25 games, they've had one or more turnovers. Like, that leads the NFL by a long shot. Too many mistakes, bad on third down. I need two more weeks.
All right, how about the Titans?
Call in. They know what they are. Steven Gutkowski now, he stunk to start the year, but he did hit a game winner in week one and a game winner this week. The other thing is I like self-identity. They've got a tough physical coach. He's a big guy. They run the football. And this is what I got to say about their offense. Since Ryan Tannehill has started, I struggle with Tannehill. 28 touchdowns, 5 picks, 120 quarterback rating. I give up. The bottom line is Arthur Smith, the offensive coordinator, has elevated Tannehill. Tannehill is very dependable. You got to forget what he did in Miami. Tannehill's a different quarterback here. He's dependable and will throw the ball downfield.
The Las Vegas Raiders.
I'm call out, although I love last night. Here's going to be a big problem. Defensively, they're 30th in yards allowed. They allow 6.6 yards a play. That is a big Vegas stat. That is way too many yards per play. And remember, one of the teams they played was New Orleans, who didn't throw the ball downfield. So they're 31st in sacks. They're 25th in takeaways. What does it mean? They're going to have to win games by shootouts. And you can do that, but if you start going on the road in Denver and Kansas City later in the year, and now you got to go to New England with that defense, they have one way to win. It's a shootout. It's wildly entertaining, but I don't think you can win a division just with shootouts. Remember, Kansas City got good last year when the defense arrived in week 11. You got to be able to make stops. The Raiders can't.
The Green Bay Packers.
Call in. Listen, I do think they can be too dependent on Davante Adams, although I think they're trying to build other receiving targets. I wish they threw to the tight end more, but they lead the league in scoring. Aaron Jones leads the NFL in rushing. And here's what's impressive. They have faced two teams, Mike Zimmer, defensive head coach, Matt Patricia, defensive head coach. These are organizations, they are rolling, and these are defense-leaning organizations, and they've torn them both apart. So what happens when they face a more offensive-minded team? Because Matt Patricia and Mike Zimmer's specialty is defense, and they've torn them apart.
The Chicago Bears.
Call out. I love Matt Nagy, had him on the show, but the reality is, again, you've got to be able to throw the ball more consistently. Right now, yards per play, they're 26. Their offense ranks passing yards 29th. They've been outgained. So again, like they're the opposite of the Raiders. They have to win with defense. The Raiders have to win with offense. I can't buy that. You've got to win multiple ways. I mean, the reality is as good as Mahomes is, it was their defense and running game that was crucial in big spots down the stretch for Kansas City last year.
The Los Angeles Rams.
Call in. I think it's the deepest wide receiving core in the NFL. Van Jefferson, a rookie from Florida, Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, Josh Reynolds, Tyler Higbee, a tight end's excellent. They got two running backs I like, maybe a third with Cam Akers. And it is just nothing but misdirection. Now, maybe the league catches up to it, but the Todd Gurley situation felt like it was sort of a walking on eggshells. Everybody was, this is a young, fast, loose team. Jared Goff, again, when you give him time, you let him move, he is more athletic. He's Matt Ryan, but more athletic with a better arm, and I think they're rolling.
Kyler Murray and the Cardinals.
I'm going to say call in. Again, Kyler and DeAndre Hopkins have worked instantly, so now he's got the best receiver in the league and the most mature, respected receiver in Larry Fitzgerald, and I think that's a big deal for a young quarterback. They've given him the entire playbook. They're one of four teams with 400-plus yards. It's not just about scoring. They're moving the ball. They're keeping the ball away from their defense. And this kid is the great play extender. If you've not seen Arizona play, he is just everything. And the other thing, because like Russell Wilson, he's a baseball player, he doesn't get hit. He's a great slider. Aaron Rodgers still, Carson Wentz, they kind of roll, they slide. I don't feel great. He doesn't get hit. He doesn't get grabbed. He doesn't get hit. So I think Arizona, in on a meaning, I think they'll be vying for a playoff team.
He's so fun to watch.
Yeah.
Finally, your guy, Russell Wilson, and the Seattle Seahawks.
Absolutely call in. Listen, I think last year, had they not had cluster injuries at running back, they could have gone to Green Bay and won. They are one of four NFL teams to have multiple receivers with 150 receiving yards and a receiving touchdown this year. I don't like their defensive line. They have no pass rush. But outside of Baltimore, everybody's got a hole in this league. Everybody. So what they do well, they're really good at. And I will say this, between Quadre Diggs and Jamal Adams and Bobby Wagner, they got three thumpers on defense. It feels like a Pete Carroll team. You know, they kind of pop you. They take big chances. Hard to beat them over the top, but they do not have a pass rush, which in the end, that's their hole. You got to try to generate some pass rush. Now, what Seattle's doing is they're putting Jamal Adams in the box, and this is why they went and got him. He generates a pass rush. So good stuff. Don't buy the Steelers yet. I'm watching that game against Denver, and I'm like, it's Jeff Driscoll. You're at home. Put it away. What are you doing? Now, did they have two or three offensive linemen out? I got to see two more games of the Steelers. Now, this week they get Houston at home, and Houston's falling apart, and they're a mess.
That's a good test for them, though. Yeah. I do like the Steelers defense, despite that.
I've already got my blazing five games picked. Last week kind of got robbed. Not going to complain about it. 4-6 on the year. Last week was actually a very difficult week for a couple of my odds maker buddies. It was a tough week. The Dallas game threw everybody for a loop. You know, it was funny because at the end of it, the second half, I'm like, this is what I thought I'd see in the first half. Dallas just moving up and down the field. When you fumble three times in a row, it's like, okay.
Just following that game on Twitter was a delight. It was like, it's over for the Cowboys. It's over for Dak. Mike McCarthy's a disaster. And then by the end of the game, it's, you know, Cowboy Nation.
So Dallas gets Seattle next. Good luck. Houston could go 0-3. They get Pittsburgh and Pittsburgh next. So some teams, Dallas may find themselves 1-2 quickly in Seattle. It's a huge game for the Seahawks and Cowboys. For joining everybody, see you tomorrow.